Hello, extra time.
Very important to the league not to get a hold because it damages your reputation. It makes people, when they read it, just laugh at you.
The single club, they're playing in the League One and they're playing in the Europa League and they're credit.
You're very welcome along to the ExtraTime.ie Sportscast with me, Declan Maron. Hope you're keeping well. Don't forget to get in touch with us at ExtraTime News on Facebook and Twitter, ExtraTimeLive@gmail.com for any recommendations or things you'd like to hear us broadcast in these sort of, weirdly unprecedented times. We've got a great show for you once again. Today we're going to talk to Conan Byrne, who's done his marathon walk around all the Dublin stadiums. You may have seen this. You may have also seen me interrupting one of his videos. I'm going to have him on and apologise for that today. Right now I'm joined by Mokhtar Fares and Tom O'Connor, or LOI Moontour as he goes by these days on Twitter. We're going to talk a little bit about Tom's sort of lesson plans that have gone out there. And a bit later, Dylan O'Connell is going to join us to talk League of Ireland documentaries. So hopefully this will kill a little bit more time for you. And as I said, these times we're trying to keep going, trying to keep you entertained. Anything you do want us to cover, as I said, get involved. I see a few people sort of giving out with the sort of, I don't like esports, I don't care what happens, I'm never going to get into it. Right, well, we're doing our best here, lads. You gotta come up with a suggestion then for stuff you would like to see covered. Fair play to Air Sport, getting involved with the Satanta Cup finals. Lads, how are you doing? Have you been following any of that?
Hiya, Declan. Yeah, I was watching a couple of them last night, or over the last couple of nights, and what struck me last night, we're recording on Wednesday, watching the Drogheda Cork City game, and what two great sides they had. It was Cork had a very good side at that time, but what struck me was that Drogheda United side had some cracking players in it. The winning goal had Keith Fahey involved. Stephen Bradley was involved in the build-up as well, and a packed Tolka Park fans, Drogheda fans, I think it was, behind the goal at the Riverside end of the ground, I think, or was it the Ballybock end of the ground as well. And the previous night they'd shown Shelburne and Infield, again, a packed Tolka Park, and brought me back to the days of following the Satanta Cup. We've had the Unite the Union Cup last year, and the All-Ireland competition's coming back. But yeah, I think it's good interesting to see that it wasn't landscape, so they had to kind of squash in the picture. That's old school, the Satanta Cup is. But yeah, I've enjoyed the not a super game, maybe went extra time, nil all that draw to a Cork City game, but there's some good ones coming up. Although I think, Tom, there's one you're hoping they've wiped the videotape on.
Yeah, the 2011 final day, obviously the Tala Stadium. A game that Dundalk never really got going in, I suppose, and then there was the injury to Jason Bourne up front, and it never happened. So I'm quite happy to be washing the dishes or loading the dishwasher tonight. That's been shown.
I haven't got Air Sport, so I've missed out on a lot of this, unfortunately. I think it's a great idea. I'm gonna put the call out there. I mean, a lot of people are talking about how they're keeping going with Premier League years and all that kind of stuff. Not entirely my cup of tea, although, I mean, there must be enough footage sloshing around RTE or somewhere, and someone with enough free time in their hand to start doing a sort of League of Ireland Premier League years. How great would that be? I mean, go back, cut a couple of clips together for each month, put aside maybe half an hour. If you can, do a little bit longer than you get Soccer Republic for, but I'd love to see something like that. Tom, you might even get a look at Monaghan United in there.
We'd have to go back to VHS tapes and stuff like that, yeah.
We have been doing some of our own look back to in the past. We're calling it the Extra Time Machine. So I
nice.
Got first go of it a couple of weeks ago on a Friday evening. And I did as live updates from the very first game in Tala, Shamrock Rovers against Sligo Rovers. And then Simon O'Gorman did a great game from, I think it was the 84-85 season, Galway against Shells. Shells needed to win to stay up. It was a weird game played. I don't know what happened to the fixtures. It was actually played after the FAI Cup final that Galway had lost. And I think everyone else had played. And there was this one last fixture to be played in Terryland Park, as it was at the time. And Shells needed to win. They were 2-0 down at halftime, looked doomed. And somehow they scored three goals in the second half to stay up, or rather to stay in the Premier Division. Because what was happening, it was the first inaugural season, or the inaugural season of the First Division was coming the following year. So they needed to win to stay up, or else they'd go down. But as it was, they sent Sligo down, having got a late winner. And then Dave Donnelly, we were chatting briefly about Boys in Green, the documentary about kind of the Jack Charlton years that RTE showed over a couple of nights. So Dave dug out Ireland v Italy in the Giant Stadium in the 1994 World Cup, and he did that the other day. So we're going to be doing a few more games like that. I see other like newspapers have been doing the same. I think the Sun have been doing famous European League of Ireland games during the year, but we've enjoyed doing them. I think most people have enjoyed watching them. Maybe not Sligo, because we've managed to do two games where one Sligo lose and two they managed to get relegated without playing. But I think Sligo, the first night there was no football, I think they did a tweet out of their, I think it was an FAI Cup win that they did. I think they were one of the ones that did. So a few of the clubs are doing that as well. So we're just trying to keep ourselves entertained and hopefully keep our listeners and our viewers and our readership on the website entertained as well.
Absolutely. They've been very enjoyable, I have to say, so far. Keeping up with Davison was really, really good fun. All right, trying to look back at some of the footage as well. Greatest Games is going to be something that'll be brought into it, I'd say, in the next couple of weeks. We're going to talk a little bit with Conan Byrne about that later on as well. But for now, we're going to get on to Tom, because Tom, we know you as @BoscoIsAlive on Twitter, but your latest alter ego at LOI Moon Tours has caused a bit of a splash. You've been around doing the sort of tour around each of the radio stations, taking in the calls, sort of blown up in a time like this. And to be fair, I must say I've always known you as LOI Moon Tour, in a way, to be honest. We've had your sort of Life Beyond Soccer series on extratime.ie, where we've talked about education behind the scenes of football. Obviously that was nominated for an award. We had you on around that time, and more often than not, your timeline is sort of regularly full of strange and pretty interesting stats. Now as LOI Moon Tour, you're back doing what you seem to love, which is keeping kids in the know-how and keeping the League of Ireland promoted.
Declan, I think that's probably one of the kindest introductions I've ever had.
Well, hold off till later. I'll flatten that out later, don't worry.
Pretty much, I think that would have been in around this time last year, where I would have been aware of stuff, League of Ireland programmes that would have been carried out within separate clubs. So you had the More Than a Club project with Cork and Bowes, where you had Corrine O'Brien and Eric Inihuma would have been delivering education programmes, along with a lot of other stuff to school kids in Bowes and Cork region. You would have had John Russell would have done it a few years ago with Pats, and then when he moved to Sligo, he took that with him. Dave Morrissey then is doing similar with the Saints and Scholars programme in St. Pat's. So there was never really one in this area, so I thought it wouldn't be a bad idea. So I started exploring the idea of maybe floating lesson plans and floating a few projects or whatever towards just the schools in the area. So kind of a few schools. My wife teaches in one school and a friend's in another few schools. So we sent them out just the lesson plans and stuff in geography, English and maths, just to get a feedback and stuff. So they'd been trialed and feedback was taken on board and worksheets were kind of changed and edited and stuff like that. And it's kind of in an embryonic process or whatever way. And the season went on ahead. And then in the off season, I set up LOI Moonshore and kind of thought, well, listen, I know other people in other clubs have done things. I know this is what I kind of have trialed. I'd love to try and get a lot of people together throughout the league and see what we can do. And like many great ideas translated from in your own head into reality, it never happened. I think maybe 50 or 60 people started following and nothing really came from it. So I parked it, and then would have been Saturday the 14th of March, the schools were closed on the Thursday afternoon. Friday with no school, and Saturday I was sitting at home thinking, look, people are going to need lesson plans. You know, there's parents who are going to be grateful for anything that they can help with their kids. So I kind of just put out a wee tweet on that LOI Moonshore account that I'd set up in November and had, for want of a better word, hibernated for a while. I just set it out to Dundalk. People said, look, I have Dundalk themed lesson plans if anybody's interested, and if any other clubs are interested, just give me a shout. So the first night I had about 35 requests, so I started emailing them all individually, and that took me ages. So I was talking to Gareth Penrose, our esteemed leader on Extra Time, and he said, look, I can come on board here and help you host them, and it means that people can download them directly from the website instead of me sending them out by email, and that'll give me more time to edit them for every club. So since the Sunday, 16th of March, so we're recording on Wednesday, so about 10 days ago, I've been doing then different packs every day, making up new packs and stuff, and then for St. Patrick's, then myself and my son, Dara, my eldest son, Dara, we recorded a little Irish chat and a wee worksheet, and they're on the website as well. Just, again, trying to get people to talk, to speak the language, speak Irish. It's more very oral-focused, so in the grand scheme of things, it's not raising thousands upon thousands that Conan has done, or it's doing what I can do, basically.
Yeah.
So hopefully it'll be of use to somebody.
Oh, well, it is. I don't have any doubt about that. I mean, if anything, it's a bit of fun. It's something to keep kids occupied. I'm sure, you know, parents around the country, if they can get their hands on this over the next little while, and we'll put the link in the description of the episode, as we always do. But let's have a look through a few of them. I think, for the most part, Tom, is it third to sixth class that you've got these, and sort of works from, you mentioned a few of them there, maths, English, Irish, a bit of geography I heard you do on RTE the other day, and I'm looking at the clubs you seem to have published here for each of them at the moment. I think that's the latest to tweet is Shamrock Rovers, Dundalk, Cork City, Sligo St. Pat's, Finn Harps, UCD, Longford, Cavantilly, Bray and Drogheda, and for a few more on the way for the rest of the clubs, so they can keep an eye out for that. Do you want to, will we give this a spin? Will we give it a bit of a test drive? I mean, there's a touch of that, what was that, that Sky programme, Are You Smart and a 10-year-old kind of job about this, where it's going to, you know, you're going to give myself and Macdara a bit of a run around here. I'm happy to do any Osquelga, because I was trying to think, I had listened to a couple of the little clips yourself and your eldest Dara did there, and, you know, Cain Fir and his Farlat, and that even took me a while to figure out, because I was thinking Riva Cuig, she'd bankfrish to Limerick, so that's before they went bankrupt, Limerick, but even took me a while to remember the word for bankrupt. So where do you want to start? Do you want to pitch us a few? We'll have a go at this.
So we'll start, I suppose, if we start with the time one. So we'll look at the Rovers pack, because we have Macdara, who has his ties to that club.
Just speaking with
Shamrock Rovers. Speaking of Shamrock Rovers, and Shamrock Rovers, like a lot of clubs, most clubs actually have either put it on their website themselves, or retweeted and liked it and shared it. Like the backing we've got from clubs has been, the buy-in has been phenomenal. I think at this stage now, hopefully at the time of listening, we'll have every single club should be up there. All 19 clubs should be, there should be a link on the website by the time this goes out. So big shout out, just thanks a million to all the clubs and the PROs and everybody who's gotten behind it. Right, so back to Shamrock Rovers. Malcolm Slattery is the Shamrock Rovers kit man. So Malcolm lives an hour from Talla Stadium. He has to be at Talla Stadium 2 hours before kickoff. So if kickoff is at 7:30, what time does he have to leave his house? So he lives 1 hour from Talla Stadium. He needs to be 2 hours early for kickoff, and kickoff is at 7:30. At what time does he leave his house, Macdara?
Lahore Teresa Cahir, is it 4:30?
4:30, absolutely. Spot on.
And that, I did that in Irish, because then that means I'm just going to direct all the Irish questions to Declan. My Cooper hook will be as good. Give me another one.
You
there,
get extra marks for that, surely, for answering in Irish, isn't it? 10% extra or whatever it is.
Oh, 10% extra. Yeah, I like it.
And spelling your name right as well, but that's not going to work out in this format. Right, Macdara, second one then for you. So the team goes out to warm up at 7:00. So Alan Manis is the goalkeeper, and the goalkeepers have to warm up 20 minutes earlier than the rest of the team. So if the team are warming up at 7, what time does Alan Manis have to go out at?
So I think...
Have we lost him? That's convenient, isn't it?
Tweeting out.
Hold on, we lost your audio at a very convenient time. Are you back?
Are you still there, yeah?
Yeah, go on.
I'll cut the answer. So Alan Manis comes out at 6:40, is it?
Correct. Right, two out of two, Macdara.
He's giving himself a bit more time by muting his mic and pretending his signal dropped off there, I think.
Have you one final one for me, Tom?
One final one. We'll give you another one on maths. We'll move it away from time this time, and we'll go into money.
Okay.
So if a program, a Shamrock Rovers program, costs €3.
Okay.
And you have €20.
Yeah.
And you want to buy 4 programs.
Okay.
How much change will you have?
In your fictitious one, I think I'll have €8 back.
Why fictitious?
Yeah, because actually Hoop Scene, which is well worth the extra euro from...
It's
4 euro. I always recommended the player interviews tend to be quite good, but...
How do you know that? The press always get them for free, don't they? How do you know that?
I don't always. Sometimes it's a pay-in.
Yeah. I thought you still got your free program.
Well, no, if I'm in the press box, you do get a free program. So, Tom, is that's the kind of typical... So you've kind of... you've been able to change them around for the different clubs.
Yeah, well, I'll explain the kind of the personalization of each one. So the English one is a match report. Each match report is specific to the club itself. So if you're like your Rovers one is a match report featuring Rovers, Cabinteely. Every one of them is a match report. And just I have to give a shout out. All those match reports, some of them are my own ones. And the rest, if they're not mine, are abridged versions of those written by our very own Andrew Dempsey, who's been kind enough to let me use and to pull apart his match reports, because Andrew is our First Division aficionado. So some of the First Division games I wouldn't have covered. So what I've done is I've taken maybe his match reports, which say for Longford, Cabo. Then you have some closed questions after it, like who was playing, what was the score, that kind of crack. Then afterwards, you have more extension work, so you have... interview the two managers after the game, get their reactions. You might have suggested a different title for the match report. So there's an element of extension work in that. And that's why I've kind of given from third to sixth. So the amount of development and justification for your responses and opinions varies with your age. So, you know, there's an awful lot of flexibility. So there's an awful lot of work that can go into it, that depending on the level and the age and the ability of your child, like.
Great stuff. Well, look, I'll make sure that the description of that is in the link of the episode with LOI Moontour on Twitter if you want to find it. Positive enough to think that with all the accountants we could have here, Tom, with all this work, the League of Ireland might be in a much better nick in a couple of years' time, although a little bit ghastly to think that Andrew Dempsey is out educating the youth, I must say. Thanks a million, lads. Stick around, McDara. We're going to have a chat about documentaries after I chat to Conan Byrne next.
Gareth Penrose isn't exactly Alexander Graham Bell, but the Dubliner did bring Irish football into the modern era with the establishment of extratime.ie.
Hello, Extra Time. Thanks for your support. You are the 12th man.
So in some ways, Penrose is a pioneer. The website has evolved to include radio opinion pieces, coverage of women's football, and a regular podcast. Podcast.
Greg Bolger, as a player of some technical ability, that some is probably a bit disingenuous to yourself.
Just some.
Well, here's something back, Mr. Penrose. Thank you.
And I don't do it so they turn around and go, oh, thank you, David. Thank you for the laughs. I do it so one day someone will go, there goes David Brent. I must remember to thank him.
Now, very happy to say we've got Conan Byrne on the line. Conan, it's been a fair while since we had you on the podcast. I think it might have been in the first couple of shows I did with extratime.ie, actually. Very glad to get you on. Apart from to talk about everything that's going on at the moment, to somewhat formally apologise for interrupting one of your streams when you were doing your absolutely brilliant marathon stadium walk. If people hadn't seen this, it was for Irish Cancer Society. Ended up raising a little bit over €14,000, I think it was. And ultimately, the idea was to walk around each of the Dublin stadiums. So Tolka to Dalymount, to Richmond, to Talla, then on to Stradbroke, Cabinteely sort of area, then to UCD, and then finally out to the Aviva. So, Conan, well, first of all, how did it go? And also, yeah, apologies for interrupting your stream.
No, thanks for having me on. It was, I completely underestimated it, to be totally honest with you. I thought that sort of walking around all day shouldn't be too bad, and like a professional footballer should be okay. But gee, when I got to Stradbroke and that walk to UCD was really particularly difficult on the calves, and my midriff area is always a concern, in the sense that I always have to look after it, my hips, hamstrings and groins. So they were starting to seize up a little bit. The wind came in over the coast at Black Rock, and walking up the hill then towards UCD was a bit of a struggle, but it was just a wonderful day. Everything about it from the start, it was the weather itself was lovely. It was a great day for a walk. And I could never imagine the support that I received in the days beforehand, but I suppose on the day itself, somebody mentioned to me that just to put up to do some live videos of my walk to make it more interactive. And it was a brilliant idea because it got the fans on board, and I got a lot of feedback from from the fans, from the clubs themselves, who were absolutely terrific in helping me along, and all in a good cause, obviously, for the Irish Cancer Society, who are missing out on their huge fundraiser that's happening this week, that was meant to happen this week. And look, it's only a small dent in what they possibly could have achieved, and thankfully other people are jumping on board and doing other similar initiatives as well to help the Irish Cancer Society. So all in all, it was a wonderful day. Really struggled the next couple of days with pains and aches, but I'm sure a lot of people listening now would be delighted to hear that, that I suffered a little bit. But it was a great day, a real emotional day.
Which hurt more, putting on the Shamrock Rovers jersey or the couple of days after?
Do I really have to answer that question? Gee, no, 100% the Shamrock Rovers jersey. Yeah, like, in fairness, my best years were at Pats, and I know Bohemians would be considered their main rivals, but we had our battles over the years, and but having said all that, Shamrock Rovers were absolutely superb in everything as well. Received a jersey from Umbro, from them, and Shamrock Rovers fan, J&B Catering Company. They met me up at Shamrock Rovers and gave me something to eat. They retweeted, they liked, they shared everything on their Twitter page. So look, it's all in good spirits. I love having a bit of banter with the Shamrock Rovers fans about it, but I didn't like the experience of putting on the green and white jersey, absolutely. And plus having to walk all the way to Stradbrook, which took about 4 hours.
It's the longest part
in
of it,
that
wasn't
green
it?
And white jersey.
Yeah.
And also, like, the Sports File and Info photographer lads decided to join me when I got to Tala as soon as I put the Shamrock Rovers jersey on.
So
yeah, most pictures of me is in, you'll see me in a Rovers jersey. So yeah, I wasn't best pleased about that, but as I said, it's all for a good cause and it's all in good spirits.
Well, I was conscious of that because when I was out for a jog up that way at the time when I ran by, if people didn't see that, it was right in the middle of your recording. I decided to shout over fair fucks and not realise your recording could have completely messed up your video. So got a fair bit of feedback after that when I mentioned to the Extra Time that lads. But did many people catch you on your walk around? Was I one of the few that swore at you? Hopefully I was.
yeah, I think you were. But it was really wonderful. Like, it was part of the whole experience, was the difficult experience was that I couldn't allow anybody to join me on the walk. And that was difficult because hundreds of people, and that's no word of a lie, literally hundreds of people wanting to join me on the walk, family, friends, football players, fans, club owners even got in touch wanting to join me on the walk. But because of the social distance and you have to abide by the HSE guidelines, and rightly so. And even if I had one person with me, I didn't want any negative feedback going towards the Irish Cancer Society. So I just decided I had to do it completely on my own. And in fairness to everybody, they respected that. But I did get waves and beeps and curses at me, which was which was great. And I have to give a shout out to a couple of Pats fans that realized and heard my plea for my battery. My batteries were really struggling because, as I said, I never thought the traffic through my phone would be as much as it was. And by the time I got to Tala, I was really nearly done with my battery packs as well. And they came out to rescue, went to Tesco, bought a couple of battery packs, charged them up in the car, and handed me, obviously, through gloves. And that was able to keep me going all the way to the headquarters of the Irish Cancer Society, which was the last leg of my walk. So from the Aviva to the Irish Cancer Society. So I have to give them huge credit, because without them, I wouldn't have been able to put out the 4 or 5 videos towards the end, which got a lot of traction on social media and helped me to say thank you to everybody that did donate and to help the cause. So it was a great experience. I really was, really enjoyed it.
That's brilliant. I didn't realize that. Fair play to those lads. Each of us helping in our own little way, I suppose. I should, yeah, as you said, the social distancing element was very, very strange, because I thought the exact same thing. I thought, I'll go up and say hello and get a few words for extra time.ie as he's on his way around. I thought, no, I better stay away. I can't bothering them enough, as it looks like. And with that in mind, I suppose, we're sort of living in, as we said around the start of the show, these unprecedented times, and usually I'd be talking to you about your move up north, and that might be for another day. But what we'll have to do, I suppose, at the moment is just talk a little bit about some greatest games, and the plan is to maybe talk to a few players about this over the next little while. And I'm sure you might have a few in your mind yourself. I thought, notably, we might start with one of, I was going to say your first trophy, but it probably wouldn't be. It'd probably be your second, given you had the first division that year. But the 2009 FAI Cup win with Sporting Fingal. And if I remember this well enough, you would have had a few chances and gone quite close, and possibly also taken down for what may have been a penalty, looking back at some of the clips. So I imagine I knew you'd say that. So to win it so late on, I imagine, was pretty exhilarating.
Yeah, that actually was my first major trophy, because we actually went up through the playoffs that year. So we didn't win the first division. So it was to win it for my hometown club as well. My first trophy in League of Ireland football was unbelievable. The way we won it, I don't think I'll ever win anything like that way ever again. As you say, they had a couple of chances, hit the butt of the post after about 20, 25 minutes of the game. Actually, from before that, from that free kick, that was the one that should have been a penalty. Where Joe Kendrick, the left back at Sligo that day, took me down just inside the box, but Alan Kelly gave it as the linesman gave it as outside. So, but look, hit the post anyway, and then Sligo started to get on top a little bit, and they took the lead through Owen Doyle, who's doing unbelievable stuff over at Swindon in League Two at the moment. And it wasn't really, nothing was really going our way. We weren't really threatening at the other end of the pitch. And out of nothing, we got a penalty. Eamon Zaid was taken down, and Collie James with a fantastic penalty to put it into the top corner to make it 1-1. And we just felt as if then that the momentum had swung completely in our favour. And in the 93rd minute, Robert Bailey got a ball down the left-hand side by Shane McFall. He cut back inside and put a great ball into the box, and Gary O'Neill dived backwards to head it in over his shoulder. And oh my God, the euphoria of all that, because like I remember saying after the game, that I was speaking to Gary O'Neill after the game, he was always the player that second striker that was never getting enough credit for being the player that he was. He was the most underrated player that I've ever played with. Like, he played with in teams with Jason Byrne, Glenn Crowe, Mark Quigley, and those players were scoring 20, 25 goals every year. But they wouldn't have scored those goals, and I no problem saying it, without Gary O'Neill, because he was the most selfless player that I've ever played with. His hold up play and bringing players into play was just top class. And for him to basically win the cup for Fingal that day meant so much to him as a person, because finally he got a little bit of glory for once, but also for me as well, because I saw all the amount of work that he went through, and scoring that goal for him was just so big. So that's my biggest memory, I suppose, of the game. Was his goal, obviously to win us the first cup. Yeah,
such an unorthodox header, as you said as well. It's such a weird one watching it back. You don't really know he's done a bit of strain on the neck muscles after that. There's a few more I wanted to touch on. A notable, memorable one for me as a Limerick fan would have been the 2016 EA Sports Cup, which somehow ended 4-1, which I'm still absolutely fuming about. Never a 4-1 game, but you look to have scored the winner, because we were 1-0 up until, I think it was the 60th or 70th minute, and you look to have scored the winner. Was it Fagan got the equaliser, and then you got one, and then they stuck in another two in the last like 2 or 3 minutes, completely fell apart. But I imagine in that time, it might have been, in your head, the first time you'd scored the winning cup final goal, was it?
Yeah, like, I suppose it probably would have been like, look, you're in the EA Sports Cup final. That was my daughter, one of my daughters, Kayla, she goes to most of the games. My other daughter would have been a bit young, and she came down with my parents. So that's a huge, that game in particular, probably I remember the most, but I have the fondest memories maybe of, was because I actually received man of the match in that game. And she came up with me to receive the Man of the Match trophy off the president, and then came back up again when we lifted the trophy. So that's nice memories, nice family memories that we have of her coming up. And there's loads of pictures of us and all that as well. But the game itself, yeah, Limerick were completely in control for the first half. They absolutely dominated us. Lee Lynch, I think, scored that goal from just outside the box. And second half, then we really put it to Limerick. And thankfully, Chrissy Fagan scored from a Billy Dennehy cross. And the second one, oh my God, the ball was crossed in and I controlled it with my knee and came up and hit me in the nose and dropped right in front of me and I couldn't miss then. But yeah, thankfully it hit me in the nose and not anywhere else. And then we got the third and fourth goals. I think Graham Kelly scored Jamie McGrath scored the third and Graham Kelly scored the fourth. Mm. And it was never a 4-1 game in the end, but it was great memories of, it was our second consecutive League Cup as well. We bet Galway on penalties the year before. And Limerick, the crowd that day in Marketsfield was unbelievable. And it was just a great day.
And I suppose lastly then, I might bring up, and if you've one or two yourself that I've left out here, work away. But I was thinking 2017, we're going to have to give the goal a mention. 2017 was a cracking season for you in general. That drubbing of Bowes probably stands out as one of the sort of highlights watching you play that season with that absolutely outrageous goal from your own half.
Yeah, I suppose. Because I was on 99 goals, league goals, from the previous season. I scored two against Dundalk. They had just won the league, and I scored two against them when we won 4-2. And we had about two or three games left after that, and I didn't score. So I had a whole off season and pre season wanting to get that 100 goal. And then I went a bit of a barren spell and I didn't score for the first six or seven games in that 2017 season. So I was like, when is this goal going to come? And then all of just ball came, ball, JJ Lunny and Oscar Brennan went in for a 50-50 and that ball just popped out to me. And I tried it the week before, actually, up in Oriel Park. Well, I think it was 2 weeks before, up in Oriel Park against Gary Rogers. And it was nearly in. I hit it up again, hit it very, very cleanly. He had to go scampering back, and he only managed just to tip it over the bar. So it was always in my head. I have tried it so many times, and sure, it'll never be in clips because I've had such awful attempts that you wouldn't even see it.
Is this something you spent a long time practicing, though? Were you doing that in training for?
Absolutely. Do you know the way in training you have the crossbar challenge and halfway line? Sure, you'd be doing that in training all the time. So yeah. I'd always be very close or hit it or whatever. So I knew I had the distance. But then again, at Dalyman Park up that hill, I never thought that it would hit the actual net on the full. But I saw Shane off his line, and like he tell you himself, he used to stand a bit off his line anyway. And so I'd always noticed that on goalkeepers. So, and I knew Shane was. So I just came to me and I just said, look, I'll hit it. And again, I'd never hit a ball so sweetly. And as soon as I hit it, I knew it was in. Sure, I nearly caught the ball running up to celebrate with the Pats fans. And that's the worst thing about it. I should have just stood there, shouldn't I? And just done a Beckham on it or something. But rather than run and do a knee slide, I nearly... didn't work for me, nearly landed on my nose. But it was brilliant because it was my 100th goal as well. That was probably the most important part of it, was that I got to that landmark. And there's not many, I think there's only 44 players in the history of the League of Ireland that have scored for that have done that. 45 now, I think Kilduff with his 100 at the start of the season as well. But it's a lovely thing to have. And as a midfielder as well, there's not many midfielders on the list that have it. So I was thrilled to reach that 100 mark at that particular time. Absolutely. So it was a great win as well. I think it was 4-0, wasn't it? 4-1, 4-0.
4-0.
4-0. And it was I managed to score again in the second half as well. So it really kick-started my season.
Absolutely. Pats fans would be annoyed at me if I do leave out probably the winning the league. I think 2013 would have been the first time in quite some time. It was ultimately with a 2-0 win against Sligo, I think I'm right in saying. Is there much memories of that, or is it more a specific game that season where you would have performed?
Everyone mentions the Tala game where we won 4-0 and I got the four goals, but I think I've spoken about that enough now at this stage to keep going about that one. The game, it's the Sligo game at the end of the season was I think I just remember from the previous night, Dundalk were playing Bohemians, and if Dundalk had won, it didn't matter what we did at Sligo. We just had to keep. We wouldn't have won the league the next day at Sligo, whether we won, win, lose or draw, or win, loss or draw. And the fact that Bohemians or Dundalk went 1-0 up in Dalymount Park that night, and Stevie O'Donnell, manager of Pats now, believe it, funnily enough, got a they had a penalty, and he dinked it down, tried to dink it down the middle, and he dinked it over the bar. And in the 93rd minute, Bohemians equalised from a corner, and that made us the chance to win the league the following day then against Sligo. And I just remember the fans that day, the experience of it all, like you're going out to basically win a first league title against the team that had won it the previous season as well. And there was an absolutely, and this is a weird thing, like I'd be confident enough anyway going out onto the pitch, but there was absolutely no doubt in my mind that we were going to win that day. And Greg Bulger started it off with a 30-yard rocket into the top corner. It was a fantastic goal. I think it got goal of the season that year. Excuse me. And then a wonderful team goal. I think it went to from Brendan Clark to Ger O'Brien to me to Killian to John Russell. And John Russell squared it for Anthony Flood. It was literally in one-touch passing all the way up the pitch. And Bisto scored to make it 2-0. And I suppose the standout memory of that is him is when he's celebrating and the little kid runs out onto the pitch and he lifts him up, and then just the final whistle then the your first, that was my first league title, and yeah, it was just a wonderful feeling sharing it with family and friends and teammates, of course.
Not to forget the lads. Brilliant stuff. Well, look, yeah. I'll probably leave you go there very shortly because I've kept you a fair bit of time. Just a very quick one, and not too often do we ask about, you know, a couple of our rivals, our rival podcasters, how they're getting on and what the latest is. But a lot of us, of course, miss Greatest League in the World. We're hoping that in some capacity we might see us again. How are things looking?
Yeah, like obviously now it's all on hold at the moment with what's happening with COVID-19. But yeah, we're in discussions with a number of different people. One in particular that is showing strong interest, and yeah, we're just hoping to get something over the line because we were shocked and delighted with the amount of support that we received from everybody in the League of Ireland when they found out that Greatest League in the world was no more. Completely understandable, I suppose, with the financial situation of the FEI, because it was the official league podcast. And yeah, it probably won't be called the Greatest League in the World now anyway, because it's not run by them. But yeah, we're hoping something will get sorted. But as I said, it probably will be won't be happening until the football starts back.
That's fair enough. Well, look, Conan, thanks a million for taking the call. And look, again, apologies. Next time I see you in public, I'll keep the swearing to a minimum.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, lads, it's David Moyler. The song I did for my initiation was Sugar Hill Gang, Rappers Delight. It goes a hip, a hop, a heavy to the hip, hip hop. You don't stop the rocket to the bam bam boogie, to up jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie to beat. I'm more of a FIFA man, I'm awful at Fortnite. It goes a hip, a hop, a heavy to the hip, hip hop. You don't stop the rocket to the bam bam boogie, to up jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie to beat. I don't hate Alan Pardew, even though he did headbutt me. It goes a hip, a hop, a heavy to the hip, hip hop. You don't stop the rocket to the bam bam boogie, to up jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie to beat. Now what you hear is not a test, I'm revving to the beat. And me, the groove, and it's gone. Bye.
Now, if you're sort of halfway through all of the Netflix content, you've watched enough Friends, you've bought your Disney subscription, and you realise you're not going to sit through anything past season 9 of The Simpsons, and that's even a stretch, to be honest. Well, we're going to do our best to bring you League of Ireland specific, or at least Irish football specific, documentaries here, and thankfully I'm rejoined by Mark Dara Ferris to pile through these, but also Dylan O'Connell, who put together, well, for me, an absolutely brilliant sort of thread on Twitter of essentially sort of aggregating quite a few of these, where you can find a few clips here or there, documentaries or even halves of documentaries. Dylan, you put together, I'm not sure quite how many, but we're going to try and get through a few of them here. Do you want to, will we start off with Copa 90? Because I think that's the beginning of your thread. The Copa 90 have put a few together. And what was the one they did on Shamrock Rovers and Bows? Is it Dublin Days or something to that effect?
Derby days.
They
looked at the Shamrock Rovers and Bohemians derby. So they didn't just kind of come in, do a bit of active footage, do a video of like the Des Kelly stand. They actually did a comprehensive look. It's about 15 minutes long of like the rivalry where they talk to Pat Benlan, they talk to who was manager of Shamrock Rovers at the time. They talk to the president of Bulls, I can't think of his name, Daniel Lambert, talked to him at the time. So they give a very kind of like kind of grassroots view of the derby, why Shamrock Rovers and Bulls hate each other as such. And then they're there at a game. Bulls won 3-1 in the game. And they show everything from kickoff, the tifos, the goals go hit the ball in the net, the fan reaction. So it's a fantastic kind of like look into, I suppose, the biggest, like one of the biggest days in Irish football.
What they do really well, actually, they seem to go to a couple of different derbies and film the content there around the world. And what they do is actually, I thought, McDarrah, they capture it a lot better than more of the... And this is not really with a swipe at media over here. It's just how well Coppa 90 have done it, because it can be very, very hard to do. But they really did cover... You know, they really put you in the middle of it. It looks really atmospheric. It really... The same way if you'd look at, say, Boca River, I know they're not quite in the same boat, but if you look at that across the other side of the world on a few videos, it really picks it up. It really gives you a sense of what's going on. And I thought, to be fair to Coppa 90, they really did that with this.
Yeah, I thought it was excellent. And I wasn't overly familiar with it beforehand, but it was actually, like, it's part of a series that they do Derby Days. So they'll go and they'll do kind of the bigger fixtures around the world. So... and I would have watched a lot of them kind of subsequent to that. It's a real, there's been times I've just gone down the wormhole of looking at the videos. Like, there's one great one where they did the Hamburg derby. So when Hamburg played Pauli, which is not overly often, and they kind of went through the you know, the rivalry of that and how, you know, Hamburg had managed to avoid relegation for so long and had a clock counting up.
Yeah. I forgot
about how long they were in the Bundesliga, because they were a founding member, and then the day they got relegated home, I think it was against Borussia Mönchengladbach, who unveiled the most the best shit show, basically, TIFO, which was basically a countdown clock for when Hamburg were about to get relegated. So 45 minutes, 44, 43. I don't think it got to zero, because I think the Hamburg fans got on the pitch and before the referee blew the whistle up, and then they had to do it. So, but there's really good derbies from right around the world. But I think this one really captured what maybe Pats fans and Shelburne fans get a bit annoyed about, but what people call about the Dublin derby. And I think there's a little bit of people coming to Dublin to maybe see this derby either at Tenement Park or at Tallaght Stadium. Because they've probably seen this on Coppa 90, and it's used to be a cheap Ryanair flight over to Dublin, and you go pick up a ticket. Once you kind of knew ahead of time, you get a ticket. But it captured really well, because they have match day footage. They have the presenters like down on the pitch, basically beside the Bohemians fans, who I think come from behind on the day to definitely win the game. But so the scenes are really incredible. It just gets the passion of it. So I think it's a really good example of it. And then we might talk about the other one that's on Dylan's list that we put together and put an article on the website for, which is the one on Cork City, which is more of a looking at the you know, the rise of the Rebel Army is the name of it, but looking at Forest and the saving of Cork City, which is a different slant on maybe a Dublin Derby one that they did.
Absolutely, and it's a tough enough watch, that one, given what's gone on at the moment, you know, the current situation, given that it's quite a really romantic story of a club and its fans and the sort of, you know, the damage that's been done, the sort of rise and or the fall and then the rise, and now back to seeing a bit of the fall. And I think we're so used to seeing that in League of Ireland that it nearly makes this one a little bit harder to watch. Did you find that, Dylan?
I did. Like, I remember when the documentary originally came out, there was kind of a sense of, that was 5 years ago, like 2010 when the club really went under, 2015 when Cork City were back in the Europa League, that there was a real sense of this was a marker of like how far the club had come in such a short period of time. But now looking back on it, it's very bittersweet, because instead of the club kicking on then, it's not back to where the club was in 2010, but kind of circling the drain that it was, I suppose, in 2008.
That's it. Yeah,
2008, 2009.
That's sort of what I was thinking, looking at that as well, actually. And it's quite a different style of documentary as well to what we talked about the other Copa 91. It's got a little bit of atmosphere, but it's more sort of talking heads, isn't it? It's a lot of sort of familiar faces who'd have been involved in, you know, the turnaround. And if you want to, it's a handy way if you don't actually know the story, to get that and understand what was going on around the club at the time.
Yeah. Like, Neil Horgan has written three books on the subject, but the books they're very heavy and they're very difficult to get through, in the sense that if you're a Cork City fan, they're quite difficult to read, but also they're very heavy in some parts on like legality of it and like the politics of the club at the time. But this kind of lays it out very cleanly about what happened, which I think is very accessible to people who are either trying to get involved in Irish football or people even, one fan actually who got involved, fella got onto me on Twitter, Jay, I can't think of his username, it's Jay something. He'd seen the video and traced his family back to Cork, typed in Cork and online, the YouTube video came up and he watched it. So it is pretty cool like that. Yeah.
That's fantastic. There's a few little gems in there as well about, you know, sort of historic elements of it. I was going to actually mention Neil's book, which I think this is mentioned in as well, but the club having a sort of a community function sort of allowed for a new precedent in Irish law, and that's mentioned in the documentary and sort of explained as well. So worth a watch, that one. Let's move to a slightly different one, and we're going to try and break these down in slightly different styles of documentary, because you have your ones that are very football centric, and that is the Derby Days. That's, you know, very about the football, very about the atmosphere. You have your ones that are a little bit more story based, and I think you've even managed, Dylan, to do a whole separate bunch of sort of Northern Irish documentaries, and a lot of them, again, we'll put links to that it's on the website right now if you want to have a look. If you are a Northern Irish football fan and you want to look up a couple of Northern Irish football documentaries, a lot of them tend to be about religious divide and that kind of thing. And there's an element of that in Passion Play, which was the documentary on Derry by Channel 4. And I think even in that one, the first half is Derry. Now, I only watched the first half because that was the clip I found, but I think you can find the second half, which is on the Northern Irish fans following Rangers later in that episode. But this one was quite interesting, given that I'd mentioned the book I was reading, Come Shadow or whatever it's called, reading a lot about the troubles in the history anyway. And it's what it does, I think, quite well, this one, is it gives you sort of on the ground look at how things had sort of picked up a little bit after Bloody Sunday and the religious divide, the likes of Jim McLaughlin coming in with his team in 89, and it, you know, it gives you a sort of around the club and around the estates and how everything's looking. It does lack a little bit of football footage, I thought.
Yeah, like it's set after when Derry City won the treble in 1989, when they beat Cork City 1-0 in the replay in Dalymount, and the end of, I suppose, football in the documentary such, and then it kind of goes fully into the club's role, I suppose, socially in the city of Derry, which I do enjoy. I do really enjoy watching, but there is kind of a lack of, like, they do show footage of like kids playing, passing a ball around in Craigan and around the Bogside, but that's it, because it leans heavily into the politics of the area. Like, Eamon McCann is one of the main people interviewed, and people who aren't familiar with the politics of the North, Eamon McCann was a massive activist. He was involved in NICRA in the late 1960s, and even today he was a PVP member of the Assembly. Now he's a member of the Derry City Council. So, like, it's more about the politics of the club, and like, but it kind of shows it is something that's emerging from the conflict. Like, Eamon McCann has a quote that it asserts its identity in something. Football asserts its identity in something so joyful, and which I think kind of sums up the city, because he mentions fans. He mentions it's like 95% of the population of the city, 95% of the support for Derry are Catholic, but there is a growing Protestant support base. And where the club came from when they pulled out of the Irish League in, was it 1975? They pulled out of the Irish League when they re-entered in 1988. That this was like a kind of a celebration, the club is back, that there's another line from someone, who says that we're ambassadors now for the city of Derry, where people would associate Derry with bombs and guns. Now they're associated with the football fans who are traveling the length and breadth of the island. So there's a really kind of nice aspect about that, is like about that. But the club is just rebranding the city and rebranding the identity of Derry, which is a really worthwhile watch.
Some brilliant shots as well towards the end of it, when it is showing you a bit of the football. I think it might be the last game of the season, or it might be a cup game, I can't really remember. And it's sort of showing you the atmosphere in the stadium, and it's absolutely rocking. And then sort of shots to soldiers sort of isolated outside around the estates, but nobody there, nearly to police. So that's, it's got that kind of stuff. If you're interested enough in the story from that side of it, you should definitely check that one out. And also for Felix Healy singing the club song, which was a surprise to me. I can't believe we're going to have to, I'm sure at some stage, this will be Dave Donnelly's niche more so, to dive into sort of League of Ireland songs, because Jesus, that was absolutely fucking awful, I have to say. They're one of my sort of pet loves and hates at the same time, football songs. I remember getting a Liverpool CD when I was a kid, and it's one of those things that people give you because you support the club, but they're absolutely awful, most of them. Like, the music involved with football is generally terrible.
I would love to look though, like, what clubs are associated, like Bows have could be controversial estate, but I know Bows have like kind of taken the Old Triangle as a very Bows song now. I know Shamrock Rovers have a few, but I don't know exactly what Rovers songs are.
McDara might be able to help us in that. Any songs come off the top of the mind, McDara?
Well, if Bows are using that one, Rovers fans have been reworking Dirty Old Town for Jack Byrne. there's a David Essex song called Hold Me Close, which I really don't know why Shamrock Rovers fans sing, but it's their rendition is probably actually better than his one as well. But then, yeah, League of Ireland clubs might be a bit different from, you know, the club anthem that people would be familiar with. Yeah, you're watching Spanish football and at the end of a match, the Barcelona Real Madrid anthem comes on. But
see, that's all fine. But what I want is, I think it's like club cup final songs. You know the way some of them
equivalent of like a Give It a Last Jack,
yeah,
type 90 song. Yeah,
that's it. Well, look, that's a podcast for another day. But we will have to maybe look into that, because there's bound to be some absolute gems. Actually, if you know any, do get in touch, extratimelive@gmail.com or at Extratime News on Facebook and Twitter. Then one I definitely want to bring up here, the documentaries that you had listed in your piece, was In My Book You Should Be Ahead, sort of fly on the wall documentary of Shell's 1975. And I mean, there's a few elements we could talk about this, but for Gerry Doyle alone, it's well worth getting involved.
It's one of my favourites on the whole list, because I think it was a real snapshot into, like, not just Shelburne in the 1970s, but Irish football in itself in the 1970s. Like, on the train up to a game, they're like, at the 1939 FA Cup final between Shelburne and Sligo, there was 32,000 people at that game. The crowds are going down. We're having the same conversation almost 50 years later, yeah, which I find so funny.
Yeah. And it's not even just that conversation. I mean, you look at what they're talking about right throughout it, about, you know, the issues with Netgate, or sort of net gain on gate receipts, and clubs legislating for losses. And what it does brilliantly is it gives you a look, as I said, a sort of fly-on-the-wall look. And I'm not sure how they've really even got that footage. There must be a little bit of the players sort of letting on, but players and coaches sort of fall out on the train back, or Gerry Doyle in a board meeting talking about having to meet a sort of group of group of fans or ultras to appease them for what's going on. He's sort of like, well, I'm willing to meet them, but not if they're just going to come in and say, get better, kind of thing. You know what I mean? They have to actually have a point to what they're going to say. So it's brilliant. It's got everything in that sort of realm, you know.
And Dylan, is there early shots of Turner's Cross in that as well?
It looks like it.
Was trying to work out what ground it was.
They also have them
training in, I think it's Ringsend Park, where Ringsend Stadium, the athletics track, is. But and everyone just seems to be smoking. I just thought it was like an episode.
Yeah, but that's
of Mad Men, you know.
Yeah, I mean. Pretty late on Mad Men. You'd be disappointed if you're watching them at that point. But that's a screenshot of 1975 in general, back there. Just smoke and perms and sort of bowler hats everywhere.
The get up and the haircuts and the, well, I think some of the beards and the long hair might be coming back as hairdressers are closing in, you know.
Yeah, I'm hopefully joining them there in some capacity. But the best part is, I think they're club executives. I'm not quite sure. The old lads in the pub. towards the end of the documentary, absolutely roaring at each other. to the point, he starts going mad and saying, "Don't push me," and all this kind of stuff. And then it just sort of, the camera sort of pans over to about, you know, 2 dozen, 3 dozen empty Guinness glasses stayed in Guinness. You're like, yep, seen that scene play out a million times. But it really is, it's well worth a watch. There's a few others I want to touch on. I might jump to Care's Kids, unless you guys want to, do you want to put another one or two of the club ones out first?
Well, just the once in a lifetime one is incredible. I think it was Satanta did it originally on Dundalk's, I think 1979-1980 European Cup run, which, you know, I knew Dundalk had played Linfield, but it just puts it in, if we go back to politics, it just puts it in the context of that match. I think it took place maybe 2 days after Lord Mountbatten had been blown up in Sligo by the IRA, and I think Warren Point then happened that day as well. I think there was like 17 or 18 British soldiers killed, and the match happened like 2 days later. And the footage of the match is just incredible, how this match took place. The star of it is the Talking Heads, with plenty of people involved, but the star is Dermot Keighley. No surprise, he's got the starring role in it. And there was a description he had about the match. So Linfield fans, Dundalk fans, just throwing anything they get a hands on at each other. The guards wading in. So he described it was like playing a football match in the middle of a street riot. The match had been called off. It was crazy. Stones been thrown, cops hauling people off the pitch, all of us avoiding one side of the pitch where the trouble was at its worst. So one of the winger is interviewed, and he remembers being asked by Keighley to, you know, hug the touchline. He basically told Keighley to fuck off, which he never would have done, because there was no way he was going to that side. And at one stage, one of the Linfield supporters gets up on the roof of the stand to try and get the tricolour down, and there's just been stones thrown at him. And I was actually genuinely shocked when I saw it, because I knew there'd been this match, and there was another match, I think it must have been a Bohemians, maybe Rangers game, which was a couple of years later. But just to see the footage of this was just incredible. And then, you know, Dundalk got through the match. They played another match in, I think it was Malta, and then they went to play Celtic and played Celtic later on in the competition. So just this, you know, you look back at Dundalk's amazing run in the Europa League a few years ago, but they had this 3-tie run back in 79-80, which is just fantastic. And yeah, like all these are available either on YouTube or Vimeo, and yeah, probably if there's one, I love the Shelburne one because it's a snapshot in time, but this one is just incredible to watch. So yeah, I really like that one. I don't know, Dylan, was there another one you wanted to talk to ahead of maybe talking about Care's Kids?
There's one other one as well which I really enjoyed, just from my own, was just like from Cork, City Life and John Creedon. It's about Cork City in the 1997 Intertoto Cup. It's City that year played Standard Liège. They played FC Clone of Germany. They played Aarhus of Switzerland, and they played a team from Israel. But it kind of, there's like, it gives us just very, I suppose, first-hand look of how in the late 90s how European football was massively evolving. How like at that stage you had like how marketed the Champions League was starting to become, and how the Intertoto Cup was still this weird competition the UEFA had only just taken back over. So you only played one leg, and it gives a very good snapshot into a cup competition where no one knew what was actually happening themselves week to week. So it's a really good watch. So what I would recommend. There's also it's also got like a lot of people associate a lot with Cork soccer and Cork sport. Like you have Dave Barry, who's also a GA player, who won All-Ireland in 1990 with Cork. You have John Caulfield in it, who actually missed the sitter away in Israel.
I saw that.
It was even nicer.
It is an absolute stinker from John.
Sure, there's like a nice little kind of subplot as well in it of the German fans coming off to Cork, because Cork and Clone are twinned, as far as I know. And there's actually an interesting story with this one in itself. There was a private in the Irish Army was stationed UNIFIL over in Lebanon, and 4 soldiers went over from Lebanon, from the Blue Line in Lebanon, to Israel to watch Cork City play. And this guy had lost his whole leg because of a mine explosion from like knee down. And when they got to the game, he was given a Cork City jersey, and he was brought onto the pitch to watch the match next to the dugout, and they put his stump of his leg up on a dustbin. And it's all in the music video. My dad was actually the medic with him that went from Lebanon to Israel. But I just find that such a unique story of like how there was no health and safety, just how just summed up how kind of made it up, how people kind of made it up as they went along back then. Mm. So I would recommend that one to the life. It's kind of a snapshot into late 90s Intertotal Cup. What is this competition and Cork football?
Brilliant stuff, yeah. Well, look, we won't spend too much longer on any of these. I think we've given people a fair few. Quick mention of Cares Kids. I'm sure a lot of people have seen that, but it's another you can find around here or there. Kevin Brannigan's documentary. What I really liked about it, watching it back there, was there were quite a few mention of Noel O'Reilly as well, who of course passed away in 2008. Very sad, but you know, without just giving all the sort of front light on Brian, they do talk quite a lot about Noel O'Reilly in it as well. That's why I think Kevin Brannigan has got two, and I think he said he's another one coming out about Brian Kerr. You've so much content you could get with Brian Kerr. The way they have him sitting in that chair, it's like Brando in Godfather. He's like a crumbling Don Corleone. Like it's fantastically put together. What I was shouting for at the start, McDara, in terms of getting, you know, a sort of Premiership years type thing for the League of Ireland, which would be brilliant. I tell you what, you could put up any of those tournaments that Brian was in charge of in terms of the Irish youth teams, and I'd watch nearly every game in it, because there's some absolutely brilliant stuff in there.
Yeah, there's some really good players who went on to play very successful careers playing for the senior international team, some of them under Brian Kerr when he was senior manager. But also there's so many familiar faces for those of us who've been following the League of Ireland for years, that there were players who went on and had a very good career within the League of Ireland as well. And it's the interviews with those players, like, yeah, Kerr is the star. I think maybe they filmed that in the Mason Hall, maybe on Molesworth Street. But the other, you know, Richard Dunn been filmed, I think, sitting in a chair on the playground in the Liberties,
They've got Robbie Keane in, like, an empty hotel room in one of them. I'm like, where is that? It's like, there's no bed or there's no chairs. And actually, I noticed as well, you know, Liam George is in doing some of his physio work. Whoever he's massaging has gotten some insight into that game where he scored the penalty and into his career in general, because he keeps going all the way through the interview.
Yeah, well, I think they're probably the better interviews. Maybe those with, you know, the likes of Damien Duff and, even Stephen McPhail, talking about his involvement as well. But it's probably those interviews with the likes of George, or maybe some of the other players who never maybe were able to kick on for whatever reason. I think the interview with him, with George, kind of stands out as well. But the adoration that they have for Kerr, the warmth, and also the level of respect that they have, and what Kerr was able to mould from that group of players going up against, you know, the creme de la creme of European teams and world teams as well. No, it's a really good documentary.
That's it. It's got a bundle of stories in there as well. The likes of I think Emma Malone is recounting Brian arguing with Nigerian army generals about getting them up a certain road when it's probably, you know, they shouldn't be going that way, essentially. And Brian's like, bring me your top man, I want to have a conversation with him. It's hilarious. So do check that out. Right, we've kind of rabbited on for a fair bit of time here, lads. So I'm going to throw in a couple of words towards the end. Dylan, I think actually this is one you had on your list, and I remember this from a good while ago. I spotted it on there. It is Never Ignored, Ollie's Reds, by Owen Brennan on News Talk. This is a sort of radio one. On Ollie Byrne and the Shell team, of course, who beat Hajduk Split and lost to Deportivo. And what I really like about that, it shows the sort of, we talked about the sort of rise and fall. This manages to show that on one man's side as well. His troublesome side, you know, punching Roddy Collins and battering a referee and being in prison and all this kind of stuff. But also, it shows you big thinkers, big dreamers can go far in the league, but you definitely need to have a bit of a leash for them as well, because what way it can end, you know. Between that one, and I wanted to chuck in a mention for one I think we discussed this briefly when we did Athlone versus AC Milan. It was on Athlone Community Radio. It's pretty easy to find, athlonecommunityradio.ie, I think you can find it on. But some great interviews from that when Athlone played AC Milan back in the 70s. And lastly, I just wanted to chuck in a recommendation to, if you're looking for some documentaries outside of League of Ireland football, because we've done, 25 plus minutes on that there. just watch like any 30 for 30 documentary, maybe the more sports related ones. I know absolutely nothing about basketball, and I watched Reggie Miller versus the New York Knicks the other night, and it blew my mind. Really, really, really enjoyable. Would hugely recommend that one. Spike Lee in it and all the rivalry he ends up having and getting involved. So any more for any more, lads?
On Amazon Prime, is if you go onto Amazon Prime, type in World Cup, you get the official film from every FIFA World Cup from 1960 to 2014. And FIFA just uploaded the 2018 World Cup full film onto YouTube. They're all fantastic watches.
That is a great shout. I don't have Amazon Prime. I will probably sign up just for that. McGarra, any more?
So the other one maybe to recommend is Disney Plus has just arrived in the last couple of days. And I saw that Free Solo is on it, which is a climbing documentary of someone trying to climb, I think it's El Cap maybe in the States, and it's edge of the seat stuff to watch. And then coming on the 1st of April on Netflix will be the second series of Sunderland Till I Die. I think that'll be quite interesting.
We did a bit of talk on that one last time, didn't we? So
maybe people want to blitz through all whatever, I don't know how many episodes it'll be, but 1st of April I think it launches. I don't know whether it's week by week or whether they'll upload them all, but yeah, they're doing another series of that. So I found that very entertaining, the first series on that as Sunderland. Yeah, not the, let's say maybe it's a better news story than the last time.
Yeah. Possibly. Well, look, lads, thanks a million for getting involved. And thank you very much for listening in. As always, any recommendations to the emails we mentioned earlier on, extratimelive@gmail.com or at Extra Time News, Facebook or Twitter. We should be back to you next week.